This is Father Bob Warren of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement. Thank you for listening to this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour radio show. The Friars' popular Ave Maria Hour was first brought to the radio airwaves in 1939, recorded in New York City and on the mountainside grounds at Graymore, a home in Garrison, New York. These timeless classic stories of the Bible and the lives of the saints came to life each week through dramatic reenactment by professional actors and actresses. You know, friends, Christ once said, "Do not hide your treasure under a bushel." In saying this, he meant, share your gifts, share your talents. The Friars of the Atonement feel the message in these broadcasts remains as powerful and timely as when they were originally aired, and we are so happy be able to share them with you today. To learn more about the missions and ministries of the Friars of the Atonement, I invite you to visit our website, www.atonementfriars.org. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour.
Part 2 of the story of St. John Capistran, the Battle of Belgrade. When John Capistran was ordained, shortly after his miraculous conversion while in prison, he at once took up a fight against the enemies who were attacking the unity of the Church. During the next 30 years, on fire with the spirit of St. Francis, he converted thousands by his preaching and was in great demand by the city, state, and national rulers. In 1451, Emperor Frederick III begged the Holy Father to send Capistran to help put a check on the scandalous advances of the heretical Hussites. At that time, Capistran was preaching in Olmutz in Moravia.
And I say to you, kings and rulers of people, earthly power and greatness is but a passing shadow, an exaggeration of man's concept of himself. O Caesar, where is your glory now? Where your triumphs? Where your wealth? Nero, where is your cruelty now? All these are gone, humbled in eternal damnation in the cavern of the devil. Who are you to interrupt my sermon?
Your pardon, Father, but I bring urgent news from Cardinal Silvio.
Wait for me, messenger. Whatever this is, I'll answer after I've finished my sermon.
John read the message. For an instant, his knees buckled, and he grabbed the altar for support. But he recovered and resumed his sermon.
Now, someone raised the question of fasting. Does a sick man who eats break the fast? No, not if he eats the whole cow. I fear that a great many people concern themselves unnecessarily about fasting in this way. The day before, they say, tomorrow's a fast day, let's have an extra good meal today. Next day, they say, today's a fast day, let's have a big dinner. And the day after, they say, yesterday was a fast day. Let's eat early today. People of Olmutz, prepare yourselves for terrible news. A message has just reached me. On May 29th, the Turks captured Constantinople. Take up the cross. The Turks must be driven out.
Capistran hurried to Krakow, and at the wedding feast of the Polish king, he urged him and all the guests to take up the cross of the crusade. In a letter to the Pope, He pointed the need for immediate action. Nicholas V issued a bull against the Turks, calling on the Christian powers to keep peace among themselves. But Europe was lulled into a sense of dubious security.
What's been done, Your Eminence?
Very little.
But the bull, the Pope's bull against the Turks?
It brought some peace in the Italian states where Milan, Genoa, Venice, and Naples were lacerating each other like dogs.
Good, good. Now that these Christians have stopped devouring each other, they can give all their energies against the Turks.
It did not turn out that way, John. The Turks made no further move after taking Constantinople. The first scare soon evaporated.
Oh, what fools we are. They're not rested Constantinople. The Turks have but one goal, to make a circle of their crescent. Yesterday it was a foothold in Europe. Tomorrow it may be Serbia that falls, the next day Hungary. And once Hungary falls, all Europe lies open, even Italy and Rome.
Yes, we who are nearer to the danger know these things. But Italy's on vacation, enjoying her peace of the moment, and is loath to rearm.
Must they wait until the Turks stable their horses in the Vatican?
I'm afraid so, John. Even Hungary wants peace. As for Italy, I hardly dare tell you this.
You speak.
Venice and Genoa have concluded a treaty of peace with the Turks.
These words stung Capistran to furious activity. He sent the papal bull to the Bohemian king. But the king was preparing for war against Saxony. In vain, Capistran urged them not to sacrifice matters of faith to secular aims. He appealed to Emperor Frederick III, who did issue a call for a general assembly. It was a failure. On all sides, Capistran was told the enthusiasm for crusades was dead. He was nearing 70 and he was tired. But informed that there was a diet called for September at Frankfurt, he determined to attend.
I have a way of stopping the Turks. Poland can easily bring up an army of 200,000 men.
You're wrong. Poland can't raise half that number of trained soldiers.
All right, Count. If you'd only let me finish. Say Poland can raise only 100,000 men. That'll still be enough.
To stop the Turks?
If we go to the Tartars, who are the arch enemies of the Turks, and get them to fight. After the infidel dogs have torn each other apart, Poland, with a fresh 100,000 men, will fall on the weary Turks and annihilate them.
A most excellent plan. Congratulations, Prince.
Thank you, Count. Then you think it will work?
Oh, yes, yes. Provided you can hoodwink the Tartars into doing our fighting for us.
They'll fight. They hate the Turks.
Almost as much as they do the Christians. My dear Count, though the Tartars be heathen, it does not follow they are fools.
What do you mean?
They have the identical plan of letting the Turk and Christian fight to exhaustion, and then falling on the weaker party.
Yes.
Well, we should consider at least the plan.
Thank you, Cardinal. To make the plan feasible, the Pope must arrange peace between Poland and Prussia, and should advance the money to Poland with which to buy the services of the Tartars.
I seriously doubt if the papal treasury is prepared for that kind of expenditure.
The Prince knows perfectly well that peace with Prussia is not favorable to the Poles. Patriotic enthusiasm is demanding the annexation of Prussia.
The Pope is not interested. He sits in Rome and issues a call for a crusade.
Much talk of the crusade, much blaming of the Pope. But what planning there was done in secret. Capistran thundered in the pulpit to arouse the people to take up the cross, and learned about the meeting from the Cardinal.
What was decided, Your Eminence?
While at the Diet, news came that the Turks have invaded Serbia with 40,000 men.
That does not come as a surprise. They'll advance along the Danube, which leads to the heart of Hungary, unless they can be stopped at Belgrade.
The ambassador reported that unless Germany helped with 70,000 foot soldiers very quickly, Hungary would have to sign a peace pact with the Turks.
Do they get the troops?
The Diet granted 12,000 cavalry and 30,000 infantry.
Oh, it is not enough. But when will they be in the field?
The details have been postponed to the next Diet.
Postponed? Until when?
The Diet will meet in February.
Oh, Lord God of hosts. How long must I wait before I can make these rulers understand their peril?
The military estimates it will be August before effective help can come from Germany.
We have blundered. I have blundered. Publicly, I've defended the Pope. But I say to you, it was a mistake to send a mere copy of his bull. It should have been an original document with an official seal. Our legate should have been of higher rank.
Rome has been slow in responding my requests.
Your Eminence, many talk as if this Diet had done great things.
Well, it did accomplish something, and if we are
but... With all due respect to your position, I think very little, next to nothing, has been done.
Sure.
I must speak no matter what the penalty. I am writing direct to Rome, and I shall say, if Hungary makes peace with the Sultan, woe to thee, Italy. Woe to thee, Rome. I will urge with all the power I command that the Pope do his utmost to have German troops in Hungary by May at the latest, not August.
Go to Rome yourself, John.
Ah, no. Tomorrow, I go to Hungary to prevent a hasty agreement with the Turks.
Meanwhile, in Rome, Pope Nicholas was seriously ill, and important affairs were at a standstill. Capistrano's superiors of the Franciscan order were begging him to return because his leadership was needed badly. As he turned these petitions aside, he felt he would never again see Italy. He wrote that the order should send two brothers from his homeland for the purpose of closing his eyes at his death and to bring his books and documents back to Capistrano. Reports from Hungary were serious. They were answered by another Diet which failed. The Hungarians were told that order and reforms from the emperor must come ahead of any crusade. The Diet was dispersed with a warning to be ready for war. Again came the call from John's order.
John, the Vicar General has written to you?
Yes. He commands me to come back.
They intend to lecture the next Father General of your order.
I will not go back.
It's a command from your superior. You must obey.
Your Eminence, you know how much I love my religious family. But I cannot afford to endanger a 30-year struggle for the reform now.
And what about your vow of obedience to your superior?
My superior has overlooked one important fact.
Well, what is that?
As General Inquisitor, I am exempt from the commands of a superior. I will not return to Italy unless I am ordered to do so by the Pope.
I'm glad you've reached this decision. You will be needed at Rab.
Another conference filled with chatter but no action.
This one may be different. The Turks press on, and the concern is now intense.
I shall attend.
Attention! Attention, please! The courier has just brought this message. The date is June 1st. Today, Novgorod, the chief mining center of Serbia, fell to the Sultan. All the noblemen of the city were executed. 320 young men were forced to become slave soldiers. 700 women were handed over to the soldiers. I pledge 7,000 men at my own cost.
I promise an equal number.
That's 14,000. Let King Ladislaus furnish 20,000, the Pope and Duke of Burgundy an equal number.
The Italian princess, 10,000 each. Guarantee pay for 3 months in advance, and I can drive the Turks out of Europe, carry the war into Asia, perhaps even regain the Holy Land.
I shall at once put your splendid plan before the Pope.
Urge him to send a cardinal legate with finances who shall head the crusade.
What of England and of France? Will they join us?
How can we expect these distant powers to help if lands immediately threatened refuse to grasp the seriousness of the situation? At Budapest, the Hungarians deliberate but make no military preparations and say no attack is expected this year.
Father, the people must be aroused to their danger. Come with me to Transylvania and preach the crusade.
Most willingly, Hunyadi.
In Transylvania, Capistran preached the crusade. But at the same time, had to deal with a schismatic clergy who blunted his effect with the people. Capistran sent a letter to all Catholic barons, urging them to offer an ultimatum to the schismatic clergy. Either to accept the Roman Catholic Church or leave the country. But the barons were unwilling. They said that if they ordered mass conversion, they would have to provide Catholic churches, schools, and clergy. Then suddenly, Capistran was ordered to Budapest.
I was ordered here to meet the legate.
I am Cardinal John Carvajal, legate to Germany and Hungary. My order from the Pope was to get in touch with John Capistran at once.
I place myself at your disposal.
Rather, I am at your disposal. I have come in answer to the request that the papal legate march at the head of the crusade.
Your arrival is indeed timely. With you and Hunyadi in the lead, we can bring together the quantities of food that are as urgently needed as warriors.
I bring you this papal brief. It may be late, but it gives you full authority of a crusade preacher.
I have done little else since my arrival.
That is not all. Here is a special crucifix, blessed for you by the Pope.
I will defend it with my blood.
What do you think should be done first?
The Diet meets in a few days. The king and the emperor must settle their feud so that Hunyadi, the ablest general here, be put in command of the army.
And next?
We must make sure the Diet votes the money and the men.
Well, John, the Diet was reluctant, but they voted the funds. Each 100 citizens must furnish 10 horsemen and 2 foot soldiers.
Who will command?
That was not settled.
What? How long will they delay?
It is the general opinion that nothing can be done before August, when the new harvest will be ready.
But the next day brought the terrible news. Mohammed II was on the march with a vast army toward the southern border of Hungary. Rival barons put aside their quarrels. Hunyadi was made commander-in-chief, and appeals for help were sent in all directions. The crusade preachers were everywhere, inspiring the people to take up the cross. Thousands pledged themselves. Then came a stinging message from Belgrade.
Father, this just came from Shilagius, commander of Belgrade.
Stop preaching and bring at once as many men as you have.
How many do we have?
I personally put the cross on 27,000 soldiers.
These men are untrained. I can't use them.
The Turks have arrived a month before we thought. There is no time to train the men. Capistran will lead every man who will follow him to the border.
Very well, I'll take what troops I have and take my position at Kiev to prevent the Turkish fleet from entering the Danube. If they can blockade the city from Riverside, Belgrade is doomed.
We are to send the crusaders to Kiev?
Yes. Have them there before the Turks reach the Danube.
We'll entreat the Pope to send a fleet against Constantinople.
And with no loss of time.
I add this line to a letter already written. The danger is such that delay of one day, nay, even of a few hours, may lead to a catastrophe over which Christianity would weep forever.
We can't wait longer for men to arrive. We must go with what we have.
But only a few thousand, when you expected tens of thousands. Capistran, I can't understand you. 2 days ago, you were depressed because of the numbers. Now you act as if you're leading the most powerful army in Christendom.
I am.
But the size of your army's changed but little. What's come over you?
A vision. Last night, as I said prayers for the dead, I saw an arrow fall from heaven to the altar. Written in gold was a message.
What message?
It read, "Fear not, John. Go down quickly. In the power of my name and of the Holy Cross, thou wilt conquer the Turks."
June 22nd.
The Sultan's only 4 days south of the Danube.
July 3rd.
The Turkish fleet has already occupied the Danube. It controls all passes into Hungary below Belgrade.
Today we expect the siege to begin. Hunyadi fights daily outside the walls against the Turks. But what can he do without assistance? Never before have the Turks put such a large force into action.
July 7th.
The Turkish army is encamped around the city. Their siege guns are in position. Their fleet moves in to blockade us from the riverside. Tell the kings and princes to bestir themselves. If kings, barons, princes, yes, and prelates do not wish to be visited by the Turks, let them come here. If they wish to keep their possessions, here is the place to fight before the Turks become masters on land as they are now on water. Give your blood now, lest your children shed tears forevermore.
Father, the situation is impossible. Belgrade can't be defended.
But the crusaders are assembling. Reinforcements will soon arrive.
Fully armed, untrained. I can't do a thing with these people.
Belgrade must not fall. I'll not order a man to leave.
The legate's in agreement with me. We're not to risk battle with these volunteers alone. He says to wait until the Feast of the Assumption. Then he expects to come himself with a well-equipped army.
A month. Can the city hold out for a... What's that?
The answer to your question, John. The Turks are catapulting huge stones against the city. John, the Turks have offered an agreement.
What kind of an agreement?
Free passage through Hungary, and they will not harm us.
Never. I want a free road to Italy.
Many in Hungary favor a settlement.
You and I are old friends. I go back to Belgrade. From it, I'll not budge. Victory lay in God's hands, and God is with us.
You know I can't leave you there. And we attack. The Turkish ships are stretched across the river. We've got about 200 small vessels. We'll sail down the river to the island of Semnin. Debark part of my force to attack by land. The rest of the men will march along the bank and attack the rear.
Come. There's no time to lose.
In the dark of the night, the crusaders' ships floated down the river. Many ships were loaded with sand and then were released in the swift current. They crashed the Turk ships, causing serious damage and great confusion. With what few well-trained troops he had, Hunyadi attacked from the rear. High on the right shore, visible to all, stood Capistran waving a banner of the cross. In the lulls of battle, weary crusaders could hear his ringing voice calling on them to fight on in the name of Jesus. And men responded so valiantly that the battle ended in 5 hours. The power of the Turkish fleet was broken. The way cleared for reinforcements to enter Belgrade. This proved to be the turning point. For later, when the land army attacked, The Turks found the defenses strengthened and were forced to retreat. Less than 3 weeks after the victory, Capistran was dead from the pestilence caused by the unburied dead in the service of humanity.